This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning, Roger, and good morning, world, as we check in this morning again from our studios in Huntley, Illinois, in Sun City, where we didn't see a whole lot of sun yesterday. We'll probably get a little damp today and a little damp tomorrow from some showers, but not a rainout, I think, for the Halloween. And, of course, it is the end of October. It is 1 week away from going out of daylight saving time. An early reminder that a week from tonight, we'll fall back 1 hour, spring forward, fall back on the clocks as that time changes. And this morning is another sign that, yes, the season is moving along, because Jim Fizell will make his final appearance for the 2016 growing season this morning. He's standing by, and he'll be checking in with us here in just a few minutes. But when we get to the last report from Jim Fizell in October, you know the growing season is over. But it will be a busy weekend at a lot of farmer markets around the country, and certainly at those farm stands that have been open all through the growing season. And a lot of them out in our part of the world, like Tom's Market and Gobert's, putting up some extensive Halloween displays and the tractor ride and that sort of thing for the family. So you still have time to do that today, tomorrow, and then, of course, Sunday, October 31st. But we'll be talking about all of that, and we'll be talking markets, too, because it continues to be an interesting year in not only the Wall Street activity, but certainly in the agricultural commodity activity, both livestock and grains. And this far, at least, harvest season's been going along pretty well. So a lot going on yet, but we're winding down as well and finally are getting some color. Our clump maple in the backyard turned brilliant red this week, and We still are waiting some areas for pretty good color. So a lot to talk about here this morning. Glad you're with us on this Saturday, and hope to see you tomorrow at Sycamore, Illinois, on the final day of the Pumpkin Festival. We're going to talk more about that this morning, because several of you have been emailing and calling saying, okay, you're going to be in Sycamore as the Grand Marshal of the parade Sunday, but where are you going to be to meet, greet, and sign books? Well, we'll have all of that for you, too, because yesterday I got word that we'll be at the intersection of Maple Street and State Street in Sycamore, Illinois, tomorrow from 10:30 until noon, and then we'll ride as Grand Marshal in the parade and hope it doesn't rain on the convertible. But we'll be there 10:30 to 12, and that's right in front of the information booth, they tell me, at the corner of Maple Street and State Street. Well, we've kept Jim standing by long enough, and we'll take a time out, and then Jim Fizell will join us for the final time this growing season here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is definitely the end of the growing season when we tell you this will be our last visit of the garden year with Jim Fizell here on the Saturday Morning Show. I think, Jim, as we mature, these summer sessions go faster and faster every year, don't they?
They really do. It's amazing how quick they come along. And it seemed like yesterday we're talking about getting the garden planted, and here it's done, and we're closing things up. I don't know. Age has something to do with it, Orion. We've been around a couple of decades here, and I guess that has to do with it. But we keep going.
We do. That's the only thing to do. So don't retire.
Who was it that said, don't look back, somebody will gain on you?
That's right.
Oh, yes. Anyway.
But yeah, there's work to do outside, isn't there?
Well, there sure is. You know, we need to finish up the garden. Even though the weather can be nice at this time of year, we know that's a dwindling commodity, and we're soon going to be out of that. We need to continue to get rid of the leaves. Don't let them smother your grass. I like to shred them in place because the nutrients that those trees picked up to make those leaves are still in them, and that can help fertilize your turf grass underneath. Mow the grass as long as it keeps growing. You can mow it the last time, if you can figure out what that is, down to a lower height, maybe an inch below normal. Apply a fertilizer if you have not yet. And the one that you want to put on at this time of year has low nitrogen and high potassium, which keeps the grass fairly well hardened off, so you can avoid things like snow mold during the wintertime. And especially if you've had snow mold, you probably want to put some fungicide on in those spots where the snow mold has occurred. Continue to pull up the spent annuals, all the garden plants, cut off the tops of the perennials, and you need to chop these in place if you can. Or you can pile them on the garden beds out in the vegetable garden, chop them up, dig them in, and leave it rough for the wintertime. Or you can put that into the compost. Now, you can put the leaves from the front yard out there in the garden as well, and we do that. We put them on the beds out in the garden and dig them in the spring, actually. Composting, if you have a compost pile, you can do that, but this stuff needs to be kept on your property if you can, because this is valuable organic material which can improve our clay soils. We've talked about that many times. Don't put them into the recycling bin if you can help that, although that does become compost as well, so all is not lost, because these composting firms that pick up the garden wastes do make good use of it. Still time to do some planting. We can still plant spring flowering bulbs. We can plant trees and shrubs and evergreens yet. And we can dormant seed grass. If you have bare areas that have not been seeded as yet, dormant seed them. That seed will not germinate till spring, but it will be able to come up much earlier than it would if you had to wait till the soil dried out before you could sow or prepare the soil next spring. We need to begin looking at things like our evergreens and so forth that are going to get damaged, possibly damaged by the winter. One of the things that damages evergreens is sun and wind, or some of the things, sun and wind. Now, if you have evergreens that every year have these problems, you can wrap them with burlap, not plastic, but burlap. That will keep the sun and the wind and the salt spray pretty well off of them. Use anti-desiccants if you can. But another thing, if you have evergreens maybe out in your front where they're exposed to this, just the low-growing evergreens can be protected with a fence made up of burlap stapled to stakes on the south and west side. That will keep the wind and snow off of those plants so that they don't get damaged by that, desiccated by that in the wintertime. I need to pick the last of the garden produce. That's still coming along in some areas where you have stuff in the ground. Mostly the tomatoes and the peppers and the stuff above ground are gone, except for the broccoli. If it hasn't frozen yet, that's still good. The coals will last until you have a good hard freeze, and then you need to get them out while they're still frozen and put them in the refrigerator to keep them frozen if you can. The things that are in the ground can be left there until the ground begins to freeze up. Now, one of the things I like to do is to begin collecting the tools, because many times in the past I've left them someplace and they spent the winter out there, and spring I've looked for them, couldn't figure out where they were. So collect all your tools. Get them in one place. Wash off all the mud and accumulated debris. Wipe the metal parts with an oily rag so they don't rust over the wintertime. And then hang them up where they won't be tripped over so you can find them. You need to drain the hoses and your irrigation system so they don't freeze up. Hang the hoses in a warm place so the water left in them doesn't freeze. Or if you're very careful, you can actually drain these hoses and then there's nothing in them to freeze. That's generally what we do. We have a hose reel that we can drain the hoses and just keep them in the garage that way. I've never had a problem. Run your mower out of gasoline after you've used it the last time, or add stabilizer to the gasoline so it doesn't sludge up for you over the winter. Clean off all the oil and the grime, remove the spark plug, clean the filters, change the oil if you have a four cycle, and then install a new spark plug so it'll be ready to go in spring. Also, you need to check out your snow blowers and your snow shovels. I like to service the snow blower in the spring, but many times I don't do that. Get it serviced, start it up to make sure it's going to run all okay while the weather is still fairly nice. You'll be glad you did that when you get out and you have 4 inches of snow and the temperature is near zero, if it's going to start up real well because you've tried it, you'll be much happier with that. Take a walk around your garden and see how things are doing. Jot down any notes that you have into your journal. All of us should be keeping a journal by now. Keep track of what is good and what didn't work so well so you won't make the same mistake over again. Then one of the things I like to do the weekend after the beginning of November, actually, is to install my outdoor holiday decorations. You put up the lights and so forth while it's still moderately warm outside, but you don't even need to turn them on until after Thanksgiving. But at least they're up there while it's comfortable doing it. You can do a much better job of it and enjoy it while you're doing it. Then visit a farm stand for the last time to get some apples and pumpkins, and then make a pie. Call Orion and me when it's ready, and we'll be right over. I want to thank you, Orion, and for Max, too, for making these weekly visits possible. And I want to thank you folks out there for listening each week. We appreciate all of you. Have a wonderful fall and a great holiday season.
And we send that greeting back to you and Jane, and we'll be in touch throughout the winter to get some questions answered. Maybe Christmas tree time, we'll give you a call and we'll talk about Christmas trees. But as always, we appreciate your knowledge, your expertise, and your good nature. And thank you for joining us, Jim Fazell, here on the Saturday Morning Show. We're coming up on 24 minutes after 5 o'clock, and our temperature on the Weather Center here in Huntley, Illinois, 64 degrees this morning. A little warmer than some of the mornings we've had recently, but it could be a cool down. And we're hoping that the showers in the forecast for Sunday will be over with by noon, because the Sycamore Pumpkin Festival Parade will get underway at 1 o'clock tomorrow in Sycamore, Illinois. They've been doing this for 55 years, and that's just a year less than I've been doing this work on WGN Radio. And as we look ahead, you know, we just came out of the FFA convention in Indianapolis, 4 days there a week ago. Got my battery recharged, rubbing shoulders with about 60,000 FFA members, and there were also a lot of VOAG teacher, FFA chapter advisors, school superintendents, and a lot of executives from companies across the country who were there basically to support the programs of the FFA, and they have done that so well year after year. And again, set a record this past year, the FFA Foundation raising $21 million to make it possible to award over $2 million in scholarships and also to award the monies it takes to run the various educational programs for members of the FFA. So, again, congratulations to the winners and those who were honored, and thank you to all of you who support the programs of, one of the two best youth leadership training programs on the planet, FFA and, of course, 4-H. And I keep talking about the fact with higher tuition and the cost of an education in college today, you've got to find ways to help that financial burden. And there are so many scholarships out there, but they don't come knocking on your door. You're going to have to go knocking on their door. Another scholarship program, not nearly the size of the FFA, but important, the Illinois Agri-Women Scholarships. And they awarded those scholarships this week. The 2016 winner of the Illinois Agri-Women Scholarships for a senior majoring in agriculture education. That scholarship went to Samantha Martin, and her high school agriculture teacher and FFA advisor said she is a woman who strives for excellence and works diligently to not disappoint. She'll graduate from Western Illinois University. The Illinois Agri-Women
in conjunction with the Women Changing the Face of Agriculture Conference, awards three Agent of Change scholarships each year. The first winner, Krista Temple, a student at the University of Illinois, majoring in ag communications and minoring in food and environment systems. She's a graduate of the Fulton High School here in Illinois. The second 2016 Agent of Change Scholarship winner, Jordan Johns, a student at the University of Illinois majoring in agricultural science education. She's a graduate of Pontiac Township High School, where she served as the Section 9 FFA president. And then new this year is an Agents of Change scholarship dedicated to women pursuing further graduate education. And the 2016 winner is Mary Frank. Mary is a graduate of Sterling High School and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, where she studied agribusiness, and she is currently studying agriculture law at Drake University School of Law, and plans to advocate for the agriculture as an industry and farmers as individuals while practicing law in her hometown of Sterling. Again, four outstanding people, recipients of scholarships, and kids, I tell you, they're out there, but you got to find them because they're not going to find you. We started the month of October at Madison, Wisconsin at World Dairy Expo. And, of course, we're winding up at Sycamore, Illinois tomorrow for the Pumpkin Festival. But our good friend John Onken, who will be coming back with us from time to time here on the Saturday morning show, summarized quite well the World Dairy Expo numbers this year. 74,572 visitors to the 50th edition, the golden anniversary edition of World Dairy Expo. Of that number, 3,108 international visitors from 102 different countries. And the top five countries from the standpoint of registration after the U.S., Canada number one, Mexico number two, our NAFTA trading partners, China, South Korea, and Colombia. Commercial exhibitors, companies wanting to sell equipment and technology to dairy farmers, that went up 83 this year for a total of 881 commercial exhibitors coming from 30 countries, 6 Canadian provinces, and 45 U.S. states. And then, of course, the star of World Dairy Expo, the Dairy Cow. There were 1,778 dairy cattle exhibitors coming from 37 U.S. states, 9 Canadian provinces, and 1 Mexican state. They brought a total of 2,434 head of cattle, ranging from calves to aged cows. Certainly the golden anniversary edition of World Dairy Expo, a total success. Well, we're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show. That means we take a break for news, and then we come back and talk markets and a little bit of personal thoughts on Samuelson Says. And I thank you at 24 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. Thanks to all of you for joining us this morning. And we're going to spend some time talking markets because they become, well, susceptible to rumor after rumor. Yesterday, we watched the stock market drop sharply when word came out that the FBI was going to take another look at Hillary Clinton's emails and various events that will affect the agricultural markets as well. But before all of that, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and this morning a little discussion on property rights. But the folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. That means products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. And this professional strength formula dissolves those ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color-fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around since 1947, and it's still number one. To learn where to find all of the quality Wink products, check them out at wink.com. That's W-H-I-N-K.com. This is my property. Keep out. I think I would abuse those words and much stronger words had I been involved in an incident in California a few days ago. Here's the story. A radical animal rights group, I'll not name them to give them publicity, but they released video footage claiming it was obtained during stealth visits to a California egg farm. The leader of the group said the activists entered barns several times in late September and early October, mostly at night. And then the founder of the group said they felt they had the right to enter the property because they suspected animal cruelty. Well, let me flip that story. What if it was the family of one of the members of the animal rights group sitting at home after dinner with small children watching television in the evening, and the door opens and people come in and start shooting video because they suspected child cruelty in that home? Well, that's flipping the story, but really, this is a serious situation. It's not only a complete disregard for private property, and it's illegal, but it's even more dangerous to the birds and the livestock of the buildings that are entered illegally by these animal rights activists because they suspect cruelty. Because in addition to blatantly violating the law, unauthorized visitors on farms present serious threats to the health and the safety of livestock and poultry in this country. We call it biosecurity. And farmers and ranchers and egg producers are exercising more biosecurity than ever following the bird flu incident and the destruction of poultry over a year ago in this country. We have to do something about this because to suspect animal cruelty, that doesn't give you the right to go on property uninvited. There are a lot of farmers and ranchers who will invite you because they have nothing to hide, but doing it in this manner is dangerous and unlawful. Stop it. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock and 64 degrees on my thermometer in Huntley, Illinois this morning. And coming up, Market Talk with Max and his guests when we continue on the Saturday morning show.
Jerry Gokey, Gokey Group, joining us in the studio here. A harvest time rally. I remember asking somebody about it. It wasn't you, but I remember asking someone back in the summertime, what's the possibility for a harvest time rally? We got one.
Yeah, and we've had one for the last, this will be the fourth year, you know, where we now have come to the conclusion, or the media advisory group have kind of said that, you know, we make our lows around October 1st and go higher. This year, I kind of felt we were ahead of the game all along. You know, there's a lot of questions of why are we going higher in June? I think we went higher in June because we were anticipating that hot weather that didn't come or that was going to destroy our crop. So we got a harvest, a weather rally a month sooner. We should have got it in July. All of a sudden now we went down from there and made our lows in September. So everything looks like it was shifted a month early as far as the weather concerns, because we've been hearing them since last January. We heard we were going to destroy the crop. And then it didn't happen, and so we made the lows earlier in anticipation of a big crop. And then the next thing that happened is, now how do I get my hands on that physical inventory if you're an end user, crusher, exporter, cattle feeder? And, of course, everybody knew that we're going to have piles on the ground, and we always do, but you got to get the farmer to let go of it. And he got some backdoor money from ARC payments are coming in. They're pretty large. I think Winnebago County, where I farm, is something like $70 an acre for corn. My goodness, you know, that's quite a shot in the arm. That delays having any need for any cash flows until later. So we've seen this cat and mouse game between the farmer and who's selling. And the last thing I heard was a lot of elevators were surprised. They're taking in beans. In fact, they said we're awash in beans, or we have a glut of them. And some of them were thinking they wouldn't take anymore. Well, now it rained, caused things to delay harvest. But they said surprisingly, farmers weren't selling.
One thing that we're noticing here is that that soybean yield seems to be climbing. I mean, it's already a good-sized crop, and it's going to get bigger, and still we're seeing this kind of market response.
Yeah, I think that's indicative of how we, I guess, the people in the that do this for business and in the government, maybe have underestimated the global demand for protein for quite a while now. Same thing happened last year. You know, last year at this time, people were looking for $7.50 beans because we're going to have 450 million beans left over by the end of last year's marketing year that ended this August. And we didn't. It was, you know, it was right at 200. So they missed it by big time, 50%, you know. And so I think that surprised a lot of people. And then, of course, we got on this hype about, well, China's economy, you know, it's going to implode and all that. Well, you know, that didn't happen. And they were, they're smarter than maybe traders than we give them credit for because they were buying cheaper stuff when they could. So it's it speaks well of total global demand, which is very close. In the case of soybeans, our demand might be higher than what we produce this year. And that means global stocks are pretty acute, meaning they're pretty tight. One mistake by a major exporter, which would be South America, Argentina, Brazil, or United States, Paraguay, Uruguay, you know, wipes out our 300 or 400 million bushels of carryover pretty fast, or half of it. So pretty exciting times we live in.
Will we have to see some kind of a signal from South America of crop problems to keep the bull fed, if you could call it a bull?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, I guess. Maybe the $6,400,000 question now that times have changed. But the market is a futures market, so it's anticipating what if, you know, and you look at the price and say, if something happens, beans could go up a lot more. Who knows whether the Argentine farmer will actually sell. He may hold these because he's going to plant less. That's his currency. And so far, they've not done him a good justice in a tax thing on beans. So I think we kind of like we did in June, we kind of priced our weather markets a little higher than what they were maybe should have been, like in corn, 454, I think was a high. So we may do that in soybeans to make sure that we got enough. You know, and as a buyer, you kind of put yourself in that place. Say, would I rather lock in probably $9.50 beans or $9 beans in that area when we had them? Or should I roll the dice and try to get 880 or 850 that some analysts think we could dip down to? It's more important to get your hands on the food, as we've seen, than what maybe risking 30 or 40 cents. So you could pay $12 or $13 for beans if South America had a bust again. It's pretty tight, you know. And we're the only storehouse in town until April, probably.
We haven't yet finished the harvest in the United States. It's gone well. It's been average. Some growers that I've talked to in East Central Illinois were just as happy as could be. They were able to roll nearly every day, very similar to the harvest of 2015. But we haven't got it all in yet. What if we were to turn off rainy and struggle to get the rest of the crop?
Yeah, and we've had that, and now the week ahead looks pretty good again. We're awful close in beans, and I think if you get within 90% done, then you have to look at it and say, I've got plenty of stuff in stock now that I really don't need that extra 10% until next May or June or July at the end of the year, where in beans, 10% is 400 million. Well, so that's about our carryover probably going to be. So once you've 90% done, you've got it. The thing is, we have trouble harvesting it, getting it, but you can't destroy much anymore the closer you get to being done. And I think, and also from a farmer's standpoint, you got to look at that. What are we going to do with the last 5 or 10% of corn? Are we going to just dump it because we ran out of room in storage, or do we find a home for it somewhere? And from the end user standpoint, it says, boy, if I haven't bought this stuff now, and harvest lows are behind me, what will I have to pay for it once Jerry shuts the bin door and goes to Florida or something, you know, for the winter? And what price is it going to take again? And God forbid that we have a corn or soybean problem in South America, then farmers get even tighter fisted and they hold even longer.
400 million bushel soybean carryover. That sounds like a big number, but you often hear people talking about pipeline supplies, quote, pipeline supplies of 100 million or so. Put in perspective how burdensome 400 million bushels is.
Well, it's more burdensome than 250. 250 doesn't allow you much room. 400 million allows for a little sludge factor in there. I don't think anybody knows exactly what the pipeline is, but it's probably in that 125, 125 million. So when we had a 250 million bushel carryover, that there isn't much left. You know, you almost spill that much loading it and unloading it, you know, in the United States or the globe. But 400 million is 450, it could be. I mean, bean yields could be 52 or 53. We've not found any We found hardly anybody. In fact, I couldn't name one that had a yield under 50 bushels an acre in the United States. Yet our yield nationally is 50. North Dakota, they're 10 bushels better than they ever have been. Illinois is better. And it just keeps coming in. Like it makes me nervous of how big that crop is. We probably won't know until January. And that's because if you were in the government's position, you've got to take what I tell you. But one thing you don't want to do is anticipate a big crop and then come back in a month and say, oops, I made a mistake. Price has now dropped a dollar. It wasn't really a 55, it was, or 54. It was really 51.5. We messed up. They do not want to do that because they got egg in their face then.
The skeptic in me would say they're being real cautious ahead of the election, but I guess I should know better than that. These are career bureaucrats who crunch the numbers regardless of who's in the White House. Let me come back to something you said. You used the name Jerry in talking about the farmer, and you are a farmer, about locking that bin door and going to Florida. It underscores, does it not, the necessity to really stay on top of what is happening, especially in the basis around your grain bins.
Right. And I think most farmers will probably have enough sold either forcibly or otherwise by their banks, or they did a good job of marketing where they've got their cash flow covered for a while. If you think about it, any seed company will, if you buy the seed from me, I'll float you a loan interest-free until when you can pay for it. So we're not as reliant on banks as we once were for our seed and some of our fertilizers. Some of these co-ops will extend credit. And so it's not as it's not a cash-driven market as much right away that forces me to sell. So you've got other bankers out there because if they can even charge me 2%, that's more they're going to make on money in the bank. So that kind of takes the pressure off. But still, banks are pushing guys. And I don't get asked to speak at banks very often because I think they seem to be a day late and a dollar short because they usually panic when it's too late. They should have been doing some things, proactively, so the farmers had grain sold to cover their cash needs, And one time, I think Orion said once about his father, he said when they told him when times get good, they're going to get bad, and when they're bad, they're probably going to get good. So we know that. This isn't our first rodeo, so we should be well prepared for cash flow needs.
Well, I have to ask you about that. There's a fair amount of hand-wringing already about what this winter is going to hold in that period. December through March, I heard one ag economist the other day say this right now is the calm before the storm, that there will be quite a bit of concern out in the countryside. What about those meetings between farmers and bankers? And we're hearing more of these reports of farmers bailing out of cash rental arrangements simply because it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't work in some cases. And, of course, it depends on how much money a farmer has borrowed. But, there's a lot of farmers that are pretty well healed have been around a long time. If you bought your land in the 70s and even 80s and paid too much for it, $3,000 an acre, that looks pretty good now. So I think there's probably 15% of the farmers, and I don't know if that's quantity of farmers or quantity of land that they farm, that are probably in trouble. Federal Reserve Board in Chicago has an annual ag conference. It's pretty good. And a couple of years ago, that's what they kind of looked at, 13-15% of the farmers. And those are probably farmers under 45 that have never been through an economic crisis that perhaps listened to their accountant and bought machinery and wrote it off. And
so you don't think that number is spiking significantly higher in this current situation?
I don't think so. I don't think we'll – I think with the price of grain now, we've come up off since September of 50-some cents in corn and pretty significantly in beans. That's kind of helped a lot. And you also have this number when you get – I looked at my own situation. I'm getting 10 bushels an acre more than normal in beans. Over my APH or my planting number. 10 times 9 is $90 an acre more than I have. Multiply that times 1,000 acres. It's significant. So that yield, even though prices have been reduced, that yield is made up for it a little bit. 20% more in corn or 10% more is like getting 10 to 30 to 40 cents a bushel more. Suddenly, the $4 a bushel you wanted on your APH is there. You just came around it through a back door. And we were very fortunate to a lot of people had good yields, but a low price. And insurance didn't work this year for the revenue side. But there are cases, where you could farm in North Dakota or Mississippi, and your county is a bust. You need that insurance. This year, everybody seems to be in good shape, even Ohio and Michigan that were dry. have got good bean yields.
Farmer Gokey, good talking to you as always. Jerry Gokey, Gokey Group. Also, we should hasten to point out, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Before we say good morning and check in for the 6 o'clock news, we're looking ahead to a busy week and a busy month. And first of all, again, let me respond to some emails about tomorrow at the Sycamore Pumpkin Festival Parade. Yes, I will be there. I will also have books along to sell if you are looking for a gift for someone. My book, You Can't Dream Big Enough. But at the same time, if you've received the book as a gift and would like to have it signed, keeping in mind the value of a book does not sign book by the author. The value doesn't go up till the author dies, so it'll be a long-term investment on your part. But bring your books along. I'll be happy to sign them for you. We'll be at the corner of Maple and State Street in Sycamore, just in front of the information booth from 10:30 till noon. Then we'll be serving as Grand Marshal in the parade. That gets underway at 1 o'clock. Sycamore, Illinois. Look forward to seeing a lot of you. Monday, it's off to San Diego, California to address the annual meeting of the Equipment Marketing and Distribution Association. So we'll be in San Diego for a quick trip on Monday. And then come next weekend, another gathering of outstanding young people pursuing agricultural careers. 20th Annual Agriculture Future of America Gathering in Kansas City, and I'll be there to MC a program next Friday night honoring some very special people there. And then it's back to the Chicago area and a rare joint appearance by Max Armstrong and Orion Samuelson. Max and I will be co-hosting for the Napier Settlement, a fundraiser to celebrate and support Napier Settlement's Agricultural Interpretive Center. And that'll get underway next Saturday night at 7:15. So there's a lot going on this coming week. And then following days, National Association of Farm Broadcasting, a lot of other activity and a lot of other events as we approach the holidays. But as always, we appreciate your company on WGN Radio, my home for 56 years, and we appreciate your joining us here on the Saturday morning show. Go Cubbies. Oh, and the score, because a listener called and said, you haven't mentioned the score of last night's game, 1-0, but we'll get that straightened out tonight. So we're at 6 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.